Somebody say the word Philistines.
Philistines.
Whenever you get to a place in the Bible that talks about the Philistines, you see that the Philistines are the bad guys. So tell your neighbor they're the bad guys. They have, the Philistines have postured themselves as the enemies of the people of God. There's this classic moment in history found in the Hebrew Bible. It says the Philistines now mustered their army for battle and camped between Soko and Judah and Azekah at Ephes-Damim. Saul countered by gathering his Israelite troops near the Valley of Elah. So the Philistines and Israelites faced each other on opposite hills with the valley between them. Then Goliath, somebody say Goliath.
Goliath.
Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath. Now remember the name Gath, it's the name of a town. Remember that's going to be important later. He was from Gath. He came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet. His bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. So that's his armor. He also wore bronze leg armor and carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. A shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds. His armor bearer walked ahead of him carrying a shield. So the idea here is Goliath is a giant. He is an actual giant. So here we have the Philistines. Here a Philistine, there a Philistine, everywhere a Philistine. And they're opposing Israel. But amongst the Philistines was this guy named Goliath, who was a giant. He's not really a Philistine. He's somebody from another race. He's a very big guy, and he's from an ancient race of giants called the Nephilim. Now, for those of you that have no idea about what the Nephilim are, which is almost everyone on the planet, it'll begin to make sense throughout. Why is this guy, this Goliath, this giant, showing up on the scene all of a sudden to try and destroy the Israelites? This is a giant that should have been dealt with years earlier. These giants have been taunting the Israelites for hundreds of years. Let's go back quite a ways from the story, quite a few years earlier, hundreds of years earlier. And the Anakites, or these giants, they possessed the land that belonged to the Israelites. And God told the Israelites to go and get their land. It belonged to them. But they were scared to go get it. Part of the reason they were scared is these Hebrews had been traveling to come and take back their land immediately after leaving Egyptian slavery for 400 years. And they were ready for freedom, but they weren't really ready to fight. So they send in a few guys, about 12, to go scout the land. And they can see the promised land. They're like on a mountain or on a hill looking over into the promised land. They can see it. They send out the spies into the land to scout. And a couple of the guys come back and they say, "Oh, it's awesome. It's everything we hoped and dreamed it would be. Let's go get it." But the other guys are scared and they don't want to go get it. And here's the account of the story. It says, "But Caleb tried to quiet the people as they stood before Moses. 'Let's go at once and take the land,' he said. 'We can certainly conquer it.' But the other men who had explored the land with him disagreed. 'We can't go up against them. They are stronger than we are.' So they spread this bad report about the land among the Israelites. 'The land we traveled through and explored will devour anyone who goes to live there. All the people we saw were huge.'" It's interesting. "We even saw giants there, the descendants of Anak or Anakites. Next to them, we felt like grasshoppers, and that's what they thought too. Then the whole community began weeping aloud, and they cried all night. Their voices rose in the great chorus of protest against Moses and Aaron, who were their leaders. 'If only we had died in Egypt or even here in the wilderness,' they complained." So several hundred years before the story we started with, we see this moment where the people reject God's provision and they let the giants keep them from their promise. These giants. The promise that God had made to them, the giants kept them from. The giants kept them from the provision that God had prepared for them. The giants kept them from the miracle that was literally right in front of them. They could see it with their own eyes. They simply walked away from the promise because they were afraid of the giants and they were unwilling to trust God. And I want to say today that we still have giants living in our world today. They look a little different, they sound a little different, but it's giants like injustice. Injustice that impacts the lives of our communities and people that live within our communities. Or the giant of children physically and emotionally abandoned in need of mentoring and love. That's a giant. A giant is youth with nothing to live for and completely without direction or purpose. Or people that are trapped in cycles of financial poverty for generations without understanding how to break out or having the opportunity to rise up. I think another giant is the giant of spiritual poverty. Spiritual poverty exists throughout our communities, with the vast majority of them having absolutely no idea how to pursue their Creator or to find wholeness, even though they are in desperate need. Or what about the giant of addiction? Is anybody in this room just sick and tired of losing friends and loved ones to addiction? I am. You might call it a disease. I call it a giant. It's a giant that needs to be killed. So several years later, after this moment where they decide not to take the promised land, several years later, a new leader takes over for Moses. His name is Joshua. He goes into the promised land, and he begins the process of kicking out the Anakites, or the giants. He starts the process of removing all the people that have taken what was before. And so he's expelling them, he's casting them out. And we get up to this very interesting moment, and it says, none of the descendants of Anak were left in the land of Israel. And you're like, wow, that's great! But the Bible does this a lot of times. You have to read the whole sentence. You can't just read half. Because then it goes on to say, though some still remain. Now, look at your neighbor and tell them, that means they didn't remove them all. Though some still remained, that means they didn't get rid of them all. They got rid of a lot of them, or most of them, or almost all of them. But that's not the same as all. 99% is not 100%. That's a good point. Watch where they remained. Watch where they remain. Though some still remained in Gaza, in Gath, in Ashdod. Where did we learn that Goliath came from? Gath. This is hundreds of years before. Goliath was not supposed to be there. They were supposed to have been kicked out. Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod were all part of Israel. They were all part of the promised land. These guys weren't supposed to be there. It belonged to them. But they did not remove the Anakites. They let them settle in. And friends, this happens and can happen every day in life. Every day, think about this, you start to take charge of your life. You begin to submit your life to the will of God. You begin to walk into the promised land and the promises of God for your life. You begin to see the opportunity of abundant life right in front of you. You start to breathe easy for the first time in years. Hope and healing begin to rise up in your life. You've gone to the enemy's camp and you've taken back what he stole from you. Sometimes you've even begun to reclaim your rightful inheritance. And you have all the Anakites, the giants, out of your life. Oh, except for a few. A few that are just hanging in there at Gath and Gaza and Ashdod. Like, I'll get to them. But do you know what happens when you don't kick all the enemies out of your life? When you let the giants wander around in your promise, when you let them settle in and begin to multiply, You think, I just got one to deal with. You fast forward 5 years, you got 500 to deal with. What happens is the promise that is yours is constantly at risk. It means that your children, that you, your children and your children's children will be tormented by giants that you, that they should never have known about because you should have dealt with them. Your children and your children's children will have to kill giants that you should have killed. So let me talk to you for real right now. Sometimes you have to kill the giants that your ancestors did not. Maybe they weren't strong enough. Maybe they were weak. Maybe they were frail. Maybe they didn't know better. But whatever the reason, you have giants living in your promise. And today, it's time. It's time to take your promise back. It's time to evict those giants that have absolutely no right to be messing with your promise. So go back to the original story with Goliath. When the Philistine army shows up to fight, they send out Goliath to intimidate Israel. Why? Well, because we're now a few hundred years past the moment when Joshua was supposed to get rid of all of them. And he didn't. And it wasn't the first time. They kept messing up with these guys. Joshua should have entirely evicted the Anakites from their land, but instead the giants have been living and multiplying with the Philistines in the land of their promise. In other words, this giant is the very physical representation of their failure as a nation. And so when this man steps out onto the battlefield by himself, his physical presence taunts them. It taunts them. It emotionally is saying to them, you couldn't get rid of me before. How are you going to get rid of us now? You're losers. You're weak. You're useless. I am the physical proof that everything I say is true. You couldn't overcome me before. How are you going to overcome me now? You can't. You think you're going to take back what I stole from you? That makes me laugh. You think you're going to live a prosperous and peaceful life? Not on my watch. You think you will find hope and healing and love? Who could possibly love you? You think you will find all of this? It's not going to happen because you are always the most useless when it counts the most. Just by him standing there, he says this. Just his presence communicates this to the entire nation. All the army. That's some pretty rough stuff. Israel had failed multiple times with this enemy. In that moment, a young man of God named David shows up. And he has an interaction with his older brothers who are warriors, who are soldiers, who are cowering in fear from this giant. In this interaction, his terrified and annoyed brothers respond poorly to David. And David responds to them with one of the great questions of the Bible. I think that's me. In this interaction, he asked this great question. Now watch this closely. It says, then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, and that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him in this manner, saying, so shall it be done for the man who kills him. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger was aroused against David. And he said, why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? So he's making fun of David. He's mocking him. I know your pride and insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. And David said this, listen, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? Is there not a cause? Is there not an issue that needs to be corrected right now? Is there not a problem that needs to be solved? Is there not an enemy that needs to be dealt with? These soldiers were so lost in shame that they could not see that there was a job that needed to be done by someone. There was a cause, and the cause was they needed to get rid of that giant. A giant that they should have dealt with centuries ago. But because they did not do it then, somebody has to do it now. I've told you before, it may not be your fault, but it's still your problem. Somebody has to deal with it now. So David went out single-handedly, beat this giant. A giant that shouldn't have even been there. A giant that is the direct result of the disobedience of his ancestors. A giant that was in the way of God's best for his life and the life of those around him. So David, against all the odds, he goes out with a slingshot, knocks the giant down. And the text says, therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword, the Philistine's sword, and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. So he wins, all right, is the point there. There was a cause, and David did something about it. There was a giant that needed to be dealt with, and so he took up the cause and he dealt with it. So let me ask you today, is there not a cause? Is there not a purpose in this world that you could give your life completely over to? Is there not a giant that needs to be dealt with? Is there not a cause or a giant in your life or your family or your city that needs to be addressed? I'm calling you today to rise up. To rise up to a cause. A cause requires us, like David, to give up our life to meet that cause. I mean, you give yourself, you give your time, you give your best because of the cause. But you don't just give, you also give up. If you're going to meet that cause, you need to give up your pain. You need to give up your past. You need to give up your struggles and take up a cause that is bigger than you. Something that's worth you sacrificing everything. What I'm really talking about here, that's a fancy way of saying leadership. I'm really talking about leading. We need a whole new generation of leaders who will take up a cause, who will find a need and fill it, who will find a hurt and they will heal it. And what I am discovering in this world is that we have a very big leadership vacuum because there are real issues and we need to take up the cause, causes that people are not taking up. And when it comes to taking up a cause, I need to help you with this. There are real-time challenges for leadership. To lead well, to lead in a healthy way, to lead in a way that makes generations of difference, there are issues that have to be addressed in your life. Things like basic character issues. If you have basic character flaws in your life, you're going to take up a cause and the cause is going to crush you. You've got to move. Some of you have to move your location. You've got to move from Drama Street to the no drama free zone. All right? You've been living on Drama Street like your whole life. You need to change your street. So I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, ask a friend, they'll help you. You need to invest into relationships that are good. You need to fix broken relationships, and you need to walk away from the destructive ones. a runaway. Fairly often, someone will ask me, "Hey, Pastor Kirk, can I talk to the teenagers at our church?" Normally, what they want to do is they want to tell them how bad drugs are and how it messed up their life. I always smile. They already know. What they need is a mentor for the next 3 to 5 years of their life. They don't need another story. They need someone who invests into them. This winter, if it's snowing out and the walkway is covered with a foot of snow, and you come by and you want to help out, that's great. You don't even have to be sober. You can be drunk out of your mind. We'll give you a shovel. You could be stoned, whatever they call it now. You could look like you just rolled out of the gutter because you did. You can move some snow around if you want. But if you want to mentor a teenager, you better be pure as the driven snow. Get your act together, because there's a cause. There's a cause that's worth everything you have. Every convenience, every inconvenience, there is a cause. And it's a cause that's worth it. Today, I contend with you. Is there a cause? Yes, there's thousands of them. And it's your turn. It's your turn to fight. It's your turn to win. It's your turn to be victorious. It's your turn to lead. It's your turn to set aside those things that so easily entangle you for the cause. It's your turn to live your life with a cause, with a purpose. As the worship team comes up, I ask you today, who will say today, there is a cause, and I will give my life to that cause. I will give my life to that cause. Would you stand with me? We're gonna close with that. And here's why. You need some time to respond today. So let me ask you, what is the cause that you and God need to talk about right now? What is the cause that you need to give your whole life to? Like between now and the day you die. The kind of cause that you're not even going to retire from that cause. Just a moment as we have a time to respond. While you're talking to God about that, you can also talk to God about the things you need to let go of. The things that you need to let go of right now that are in the way of you fulfilling that cause. And then you can talk to God about what you need to grab onto. There's some good things that you've been dodging for whatever reason. There's some things that will propel you forward. There's some things you need to grab onto. There's some things you need to let go of. And there's a cause that God has for you to fulfill.
Father, today, I ask that you would give each and every one in this room the courage and the strength to take up the cause that you are speaking to them right now. Would you give them the courage and strength to let go of things that will take them off mission and to pick up new things that will help them to fulfill it? I know that for each and every one in this room, that you have a cause for them, that you have a purpose, and that you have a plan, and that you well intend to see it done. Help us to walk in that way each and every day. In Jesus' name we pray.